Welcome to the SermonCoach.com podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wilson. As we always do, we're talking today with Dr. David Maines, the Executive Director of SermonCoach.com. It's our desire to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. David, of the four questions you attempt to get ministers to answer early on in their sermon preparation, which question seems to be the most difficult one?
Well, in terms of difficult to understand, that's always question four. That's the one I take more time with ministers to work on. So the first question, what's the subject? That's relatively easy, although even then, a lot of times, ministers have trouble with that. So I'm going to take a passage and we'll kind of go through these. Second one is, what is the response the passage is calling for, the sermon is calling for? The third one is the how-to. So I know that I'm supposed to pray more, say, but what if I don't know how to pray? Give me baby steps to begin me in that process. And they usually get that, although it doesn't mean it's easy to come up with those how-to steps. The last one is the how long. How long is it going to take the average listener to begin to see this inculcated as a part of his or her life? Okay, so that's the tough one, and ministers don't think about that question of how long very often. But it's a good question. One of my prevailing sins in years past was workaholism. My wife would say I'm a recovering workaholic, which means that I still have to watch it all the time, but I seem to be on top of it and have gone X amount of months or years now with it not being a dominant factor in my life. So if somebody's going to preach on workaholism, then expects me by the implication of the sermon or by actual words that I can conquer that this coming week, that's a totally unrealistic expectation. It took me about 3.5 years before I could start to say the words, I am a recovering workaholic. Now, you can have the almost exact opposite. If you want to become a member of the kingdom of God, you could respond to the sermon that morning and enter into the kingdom. So that could be very fast, but it gives you an idea of the time frame. In order to become a follower of Jesus and have his Holy Spirit come and live in your life, you don't have to say that's going to take me 6 years, because it's not. You can have it happen instantaneously. Now, the outworking of that will take a lifetime. But anyway, you're trying to give people some kind of explanation in terms of the time commitment. Because, if somebody says to you, would you be willing to be a part of our orchestra? Well, you want to know, how much is the time commitment? Could you volunteer to do something? Well, how much time commitment does a hospital expect of me? And so on. In the church, we tend to avoid that and just assume that whatever time you give, that's good. You don't give enough as it is anyway. So let's take a passage, Dean, and I'm going to see if together we can figure out what the subject is, what the response is, what the how-to might be, and the how long, okay? This is a very short passage. It's in Luke chapter 14, starting with verse 12. Then Jesus said to his host, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you'll be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So the question is, what is the subject being talked about here? And my response to that, we could quibble over the words, but it's basically talking about Christian hospitality. When you have people over to your house, who to invite? So we got a subject that we're working with. Again, nuance it as you want, but that's in essence what the subject is going to be. What is the response that is desired? It's that you don't invite the people who necessarily have the means to invite you back, but you invite those people who normally people wouldn't invite because they don't have the same resources or for whatever reason. They probably would never initiate with you. So you're going to invite the powerless, the underprivileged, the poor, whatever. If you want to go specifically, you give a banquet and you invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. That may be incredibly hard, because who are those people in our lives? Maybe some people could pull that off. It would be hard for me to know who to invite, who's crippled, lame, blind, poor. Poor, maybe I could do that. But basically, that would be literally interpreting the passage, but basically, what I want to do as far as the response is to invite people who normally would not invite me back. Okay? Now, if we got a subject and a response, and then a how-to. So then you can say, well, is that going to be somebody in the community? Is it going to be somebody in the church? Who in the church might normally not be expected because they're elderly or because they have odd work schedule or because of hardship in their lives, whatever. Maybe it's a widow with five kids, you know, whatever. But who is the person normally not invited because they're not the popular one to invite because they don't have prestige or position or whatever? So what you're to do is to figure out who is that kind of a person you could invite, and that would be the first step in the how-to. Who would be that individual? And that can be hard because I've asked myself that question often, and sometimes the names I come up with, they're not the people I necessarily want to invite because there's going to be a lot of work to ask them questions all night. And on top of that, I might invite them, have a wonderful night, and then I would not normally ever see them again after that. So then I have to figure out there's a certain factor of what's involved here, and do I want to just invite them one night and then ignore them from then on? That's not the implication of the text. So the last question then is how long? How long is it going to take? Well, for the average person in a normal church, it's going to take a while to kind of process all that and say, you know, I don't think I've done that normally in my life, to say, who are the blind, the poor, the crippled, the lame? So I have to say, I not only don't know who they are, if I invited them, they don't know who I am, you know. So how do I begin to put all that into place? That's not easy to do. And I think for a lot of people, we're talking about an assignment that in order to live like Jesus is saying here, it's not that Christian people don't entertain. They entertain a lot. They have people over their house a lot. They go out to restaurants together a lot. But how do I get into that world or that mindset? And how do I make it such that it's not incredibly awkward so that it becomes a natural part of my life? And probably we're talking an assignment that's not going to be done the following week. It's going to be a matter of weeks and months. And you know, it's not wrong to say, I would like to hear from you within a matter of 3 months. I would like at least 10% of my congregation to be able to report to me, we did it, and here's what happened. Now, that's probably going to have to be all private because, you know, if I'm somebody who considers you the lame and the poor and the blind, I don't want to announce that to the congregation. So there's a certain secretive aspect that's going on with this as well. But you're working through those questions, and of that one, probably how long is very important, because otherwise if you think you're going to preach one sermon on this and then later in that week you're going to get report from five people that they did it, that is not realistic, you know. And it's certainly not realistic if you think that everybody in your congregation understood it and are doing it. So there's a time factor that is involved, and in my mind, that time factor is very important. And I think it needs to be considered because most ministers think people can jump through hoops much faster than they can jump through them. You know, where you're treating your enemy like yourself and you're learning to pray for your enemies and ask God to do them good, it takes a while. You got to gulp it. That's like the doctor saying, here's a pill. Take it and it's about the size of a ping pong ball. You say, that'll cure me, but how in the world am I going to swallow that thing? It's more than I can figure right now. So the how long is the gracious way the minister says, this is going to really be tough for some of you. And I don't want you to just dismiss it because this is not my word. This is Jesus' word. And this is something that he expects us to do because that's what the kingdom lifestyle is like. But let's give ourselves adequate time here and let's have a reporting factor so we can see how we're coming. But the how long, that's a long answer to your question, but that's the one that's the toughie in my mind.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it is difficult in some of these disciplines to discern what's involved, what's it going to take of effort on my part, how much time is it going to take, and it's important for the minister to think through realistically what that might be.
Now, the truth is, Jesus was a friend to the poor and the powerless. The truth is, we are not nearly the friends to the poor and the powerless that we could be if we were following his example. We would probably, in a sense, say, Jesus, you're more important than that. You don't waste your time with those people. He did have compassion for these people, cared for them deeply. And in that sense, it takes a good while for people who have been raised in privilege. And as Americans, in our homes, we are very privileged people, to carry that out not only in terms of our community, but our worldwide community. It's very difficult. But Jesus challenges us to do that, and that's a good thing. But we're talking really a lifetime. And sometimes I've had ministers say to me, you know, it's going to take a lifetime to do that. I say, it really does. You're exactly right. But that doesn't help people right at the moment. What you have to do is say it's that long process to the place where this becomes second nature to me, but we're dealing with what are the first steps? How do we just get out of the blocks, if you please? Because we're not saying invite someone over, treat them very kindly, and then say, that's done, I don't have to think about it anymore. But until you've done that, you don't realize how incredibly bad at it you are, you know, and how you even know how to talk to these people. So it's, yeah, it's a lifetime, but the lifetime has to start somewhere. And so let's get us started in this way. Let's take another passage, if you don't mind.
Sure.
We'll go through those questions. This is Luke chapter 12, and it's 16 through 21. And this is another one of those deals where you say, wow, he said that. Let's sermonize on it, but don't take it too seriously, okay? Told in this parable, the ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. Then he says, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I'll store all my grain and my goods. Sounds pretty American, doesn't it? And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God. So this is the parable of the rich fool, obviously. And if you say, what is the subject? And it's true riches, I guess you'd say, would be the subject. And what is the response? You want people to think in terms of riches toward God. That's symbolic language, but I think we understand it well enough. So what are the how-tos? Well, you begin to say, where have I put my, what am I banking on in terms of my riches? Is it my insurance? Does it mean you shouldn't have insurance? No, but, you know, there's a certain thing you have to process all that. What about insurance? What about my savings? What about, do you mean you can't have savings? No, I didn't say that, you know. But there's a point in which you put all your confidence in those things to the degree that you don't trust in the Lord. And so how do you find that balance? That's not easy. I don't know that I have the balance. I think it changes as your days go along too. So you should have more faith as you go along in some ways. But anyway, you try to figure that out and you say, okay, now, what is the how-to? And there's a sense in which you have to examine where you're putting your confidence. You know, and am I laying up treasures here on earth where moth rust? What is it? Where
moth and rust doth corrupt.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Or am I putting it into things that are eternal? You know, where are my true investments? And so I think that's not an easy thing for people. And if you come down in terms of, you know, where do you go? It seems like you're going to suggest it ought to be, if you're a married couple, let's get some discussions together. Where are our true investments? Are we investing the way we really want to? Are we putting too much confidence in things that are here, not enough on things of the Lord? As my needs are less, what can I do that would, you know, balance things out more? You're just trying to come up with suggestions. But if you say that's a lifetime thing, I think you can say that, and that's true, but it's not adequate in itself. It kind of lets you off the hook so you don't have to think about it. And you're not cornered in a sense, because this parable about the rich fool, that's a parable that relates very much to where Americans are. It doesn't relate as much to Africans, because Africans don't have that much to begin with, generally speaking. So they'd cheer that. They're all for the poor guy, and they're all for saying that guy's a rich fool, you know. But what about where we are? It's something that you constantly are working at, and you're trying to say, am I being who God wants me to be? And I guess there is no, with that kind of parable, there's no way to come up with a formula that says, I got it now, so you can figure it out and see where you fit. But you're struggling with it, so you're encouraging people to talk about it, continue to think in those terms, say, okay, we've talked about it now. We should probably bring this up again and talk about it again in 6 months after we begin to make the changes we think we should make. And anyway, it's not as though you're leaving people with a text like that, because it's a great text to preach. I mean, it's a great preaching stuff, but at the same time, how do you live it? That's the big question. So you're trying to say to people, I'm giving you a feel for where this is, and the Smiths may come up with a different answer than the Joneses come up with, but the truth is both couples have wrestled with it, and that's what I want you to do.
Yeah, the wrestling with it is the key, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
We thank you for joining us for our time together. You found this SermonCoach.com podcast at our website, SermonCoach.com. That's Sermon-Coach.com. We invite you to browse through the rest of our website. We have resources there to help pastors create effective, life-transforming sermons. And we invite you to join us for our next SermonCoach.com podcast.